The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Now, tonight, I'm really, really pleased to be joined by Dr. Alison Cowan, who is a local GP. We've had the great pleasure of having Alison on a few times, and whenever we need sound advice, we always come knocking on Alison's door. And for those of you who are meeting Alison for the first time, let me just tell you, she's a portfolio GP, and her roles include Southwest Hearts GP. She's GP support for CYP Community Eating Disorders Service. She's a GP clinical lead of the Thrive Young Person Service, and she's also part of the ICS GP clinical lead for CYP MHS, which used to be known as CAMHS. I think we probably all know it as that. But Alison, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
It's a pleasure, Lydia. It's lovely to be here.
Now, I've so many questions for you. Let me start by, I read out the various roles you have, and it's just fantastic what you cover in our local community. But would you put it in your words? Tell us what you do in our community and about your roles.
Yeah, sure. No, I'm really lucky to have quite a varied role as a GP. So I still deliver a few standard GP surgeries a week, but I also deliver a couple of young persons clinics a week, which are GP clinics basically targeted for to the 11 to 25 year old age group loosely, although we're not that rigid about the age group. And I'm also clinical lead for that service. So that's in St Albans and Harpenden. And then I do a day a week for the Children's and Young People's Community Eating Disorder Service run by our local mental health trust. And that really informs a lot of my work in the Young Persons Clinic as well. And then a day a week, I also, well, essentially that's the sort of time dedicated to, I'm the clinical lead for Hertfordshire West Essex CAMHS, as you said, or it's now called Children's and Young People's Mental Health System. So it's all very much related. I love all my different roles and the work I do with it. And I feel very lucky that I'm able to do that. It's one of my passions, actually, adolescent health and in particular mental health.
And that's why we love speaking to you, as you really know what's going on with our young people. And that's why we love to bring you in as often as we can and pick your brains. So as you say, you deal directly with young people. Can you tell us a little bit about what's going on at the moment when it comes to young people's mental health?
Yeah, so I there isn't a day goes by that I don't learn from them, actually. So I think I probably do most of my learning. But yeah, they're having a tough time. A lot of the data supports that, shows that through COVID and since COVID, the mental health concerns have been on the increase. And so that's manifesting across a wide range of issues. So we're seeing a lot of young people struggling to get to school. We're seeing a lot of young people struggling with eating pattern and body image and those sorts of things. So it's a tough time at the moment for them. But equally, they're a very resilient bunch as well. And, you know, I feel that with the services that we've got available in Hertfordshire to support that resilience and help them along the way, you know, they're doing okay. And, you know, I think we're very lucky in Hertfordshire to have a lot of resources to support young people in that regard.
I kind of anticipated that times aren't easy for young people. So it's great that there's such rich resources locally. Now, I heard a while back about the self-referral concept. So that's it's the early intervention initiative. Well, how is that going? Has it kicked in? Is it making a difference?
Yeah, it's making a huge difference. So Hertfordshire did invest in a lot of early intervention resources, and the data has shown that they're being accessed more and more. And as you rightly say, the beauty of it is that they can be accessed without a professional referral or need to speak or discuss things with a professional. And those resources really stretch across the whole spectrum of emotional well-being and mental health. So they run from top tips and support around how to keep mentally fit, right the way through to having serious mental health, you know, to having mental health concerns. And a lot of those resources, we're lucky enough in Hertfordshire that we've got the Just Talk Network, which is a group of partners in Hertfordshire. I think there are in excess of 40 partners that work together, you know, across public organisations, voluntary sector, work together to pull together resources to support young people with their emotional well-being and their mental health. And then they collate all of these resources on their website that young people can access themselves, or and resources of parents and carers and schools and professionals, as well as delivering regular campaigns. So they're in regular touch. The Public Health Hertfordshire host it, and they deliver, or they run a survey every year to see what the issues are with children and young people, what their main concerns, and then using that data and through networking with their partners who all deal with children and young people and their emotional well-being, they'll come up with campaigns to run and to drive that meets the most pressing needs. So then the last campaign was all about Just Talk and highlighting these sorts of services. But the campaign for that was about what next, because they recognised that was one of the biggest worries on young people's, that young people voiced that, you know, what does the future hold is one of their biggest concerns. So there was a lot of work around that. And then the one that's coming up at the end of February is all about the power of small change. And I think that in particular resonates with me, because when there are so many big world issues going on that we know young people really worry about, global warming, the hardship, all of that young people do take to heart. And I think that campaign really sort of highlights how just small changes and small things you can do to feel better can make a massive difference. So they've had campaigns around social media, around body image, around sleep. And with all of these campaigns, they pull together resources from all the various different partners across Hertfordshire to sort of help support with that. And on their website, they have all of those early intervention self-help resources that you can access. So they've got, I'm sure, I don't know if you're familiar with 5 Steps to Wellbeing, which is a toolkit to promote mental fitness, so how to stay mentally well. And they've got gratitude diaries, which we know also help support mental fitness. And then they have those services that you can access if you have, or if you are struggling with a mental health issue. So we have a couple of digital wellbeing services with youth and the Sandbox, who have daily helplines and a 24/7 website access. And then we've got lots and lots of early intervention face-to-face resources that young people can access. So that's ranging from social prescribing with our youth link locally to children's and wellbeing practitioners that young people can refer into. And they also sit within mental health support teams in schools, so they can access it that way as well. And then we're lucky enough to have lots of counselling organisations that young people can refer themselves into. So in St Albans, it's Youth Talk, and then over in Decorum, they're equally, you know, other signposts. And then you've got Raphael House as well, and YCT, which serve the other side of the county. So really, really lucky to have those. And equally working within the eating disorder service, I'm very familiar with the sort of early intervention services that are there for those that are struggling initially with body image, if there's no eating disorder concern. And again, there's some brilliant modules called Be Body Positive that you can access through the Just Talk website, or just Googling Be Body Positive. We're lucky to have Beezy Bodies that runs teens clinics face-to-face. And then there's the First Steps Eating Disorder service that young people can refer into, or parents can refer into, if there are early concerns around an eating disorder. And then obviously the more serious concerns around an eating disorder would be accessed through the Mental Health Trust, through the Eating Disorder Service. So it's the whole breadth that's covered, but the early intervention services are the ones that young people and their families can access themselves. And
I mean, that's just mind-blowing. As you say, the breadth of services that's available is amazing, and we are so lucky to have it.
Yeah.
And just in case parents don't know how simple the self-referral service is, just can you walk us through it?
Absolutely. So with the digital wellbeing services, and there are links on the Just Talk website, but equally you could Google With Youth, and that's hosted by Hearts Mind Network. And then you'd get to the portal, the entry point, and it discusses in really easy, simple language the different support that they can offer, whether it be access to resources or whether it be one-to-one chats or texts. Or so that's the With You service. And then equally, you can Google the Sandbox or go through the link on the Just Talk website. And that similarly has got a really lovely sort of captivating website and a very clear information as to what they can access and how. So it all requires them to sort of register, but there's no wait. They can just access those resources, and the website is live 24/7, and then the helplines are every day that they can access. And Sandbox also delivers counselling sessions that they can access to, should that be what they need. And they can access those alongside seeking support from elsewhere. So I know very often there's a rhetoric that if you're actually having support, you know, from one service, you can't access another. And that there's good reasoning behind that generally, where, say, maybe two different therapies are concerned. But the digital wellbeing services can support whilst you're waiting for more specialist input, or between appointments, or if you're needing some extra help along the way. And they're all very familiar with, you know, with the breadth of services that are available. So if they felt that young person would be better managed within a different setting or needs more intensive support, then they would be able to navigate them into that setting as well.
Fantastic, Alison. Thank you so much. And so the website, would you mind just spelling it out for us?
Absolutely. So the Just Talk website is literally justtalkhearts.org, and that will take you through to the homepage, which is very easy to use, with boxes on the front page. But in terms of the digital wellbeing services, if you were to just Google With Youth Hertfordshire, it would come up. The Sandbox, it would come up. And then the Children's and Wellbeing Practitioners is a service that's hosted by or delivered by Hertfordshire Community Trust. But again, if you were to Google, and I always check this out in Young Person's Clinic, because I'm not one that can hold or know where I've kept all of those websites. So I frequently just Google and demonstrate it to young people. Actually, if you just Googled Children's Wellbeing Practitioner Hertfordshire, it would come up to the right page, and then you click on and go through the self-referral. Same is with the First Steps Eating Disorder service that young people in whom you might be concerned about an eating disorder can access support and information. And again, very easy, Google First Steps ED and up it comes, and with a little box for self-referral or further support.
That's fantastic. Thanks so much for making that all so accessible. And really, by it being self-referral, like I can just imagine, you know, families sitting down in the evening, you know, when you've actually got time to think, and then just having a look through everything that's out there, whereas, and it gives them the time to think through the issues and what approach is best for them.
And I think that's what's so key. So even when I've had a consultation with a young person and we've decided actually they would benefit from a little bit of support, say, around some disordered eating or a possible eating disorder, I even then still encourage them, and perhaps, you know, with the parent to go through and, you know, look at the website, look at the information and make that referral. Because I think it's important that young people feel that it's not being forced, that they're engaged to follow through on that. And often it can be quite scary being referred into something without really appreciating, you know, what that will involve. So I think self-referral, you know, is a great way forward, you know, assuming that you can be confident that they'll feel able to do that. So often having a parent to navigate that with them. And of course, if they didn't feel able to do it themselves, then we'd complete it in surgery or reassure them on that stakes. But no, I think being able to, and particularly young people, because they rightly, you know, I as I say, I learn a lot from them. They'll want to know exactly what it involves and what they might expect and whether it's right for them at this time or whether or not they'd be more suited to something different.
Brilliant. I love the empowerment of young people as well along the way. It makes so much sense, and particularly in a way that probably appeals to them.
That's,
you know,
it.
Like through a website at their leisure, give them time to reflect and see what's best for them. It sounds absolutely brilliant. So COVID keeps coming up.
Yeah.
You know, it did a lot of damage. Are you seeing that damage being reduced as the years go by? Are we coming out of the shadow of COVID, or what are you seeing, Alison?
I think we are. I think COVID really, by isolating young people in particular at a stage of their lives when actually it's a core developmental need that they interact with peers and have that connection, you know, I think that was really, really hard for them. And I think now that we are able to reconnect, you know, things are starting to get easier. Although even sometimes that reconnection is with a lot of, you know, angst, having not had to address it. But yeah, no, I definitely feel that we're starting to come through it. And by necessity, obviously a lot of communication went online during COVID. So I think that's uncovering some issues as well. I mean, we know that that's an important form of communication for young people, but recognizing that with that, you know, can be some harms. And in particular, what the evidence is suggesting is that sort of passive social media use, where you're scrolling and looking at posts rather than using it to communicate, can be particularly damaging to young people. It can dip their mood and obviously raise issues and concerns around body image and what they're seeing, not recognizing that it's very often the photos will be edited or unrealistic. So yeah, I think there's a lot of resources and support around that. So I know, again, on Just Talk, they did a campaign around that and what to look out for, the pitfalls with social media, and because it can be very positive as well. So it's about, you know, helping young people navigate that a little bit too. But I think we're lucky to have all of that resource, and we've all done a lot of learning through COVID. And so things do seem to be improving a little bit in that direction.
Good to hear. But I had no idea. I didn't realise that kind of passive scrolling could cause mood dips. I mean, that's a big learn.
It is.
I mean, because I know it's such an easy trap to fall into as an adult, never mind as a 13-year-old or 14-year-old.
Exactly. And often I'll say to young people that, you know, our brains are wired negatively. That's how the human race has evolved. So we're always looking out for, we're able to sort of look out for danger and compare and improve all the while. But then social media feeds into that. And if we're not aware that a lot of that imagery might not be realistic, or, you know, people will never post their down moments, it'll always be their upbeat moments, then we can easily start to feel a little bit down, and that, you know, everybody else is having a much more wild time and fun time than you, or looking much better than you. So it is quite a learning curve, but equally I feel quite strongly that we have to present the evidence to them. So I'm always for them to make their own decisions. I'm always very clear about saying actually active use can be positive. It's more the passive use. But to equally keep a digital diary, because one young person prompted me when I shared the evidence around passive use and low mood. And she said, but when I scroll through other people's holiday posts, I come off my phone feeling much happier, because she'd already identified one of her life goals was to travel the world. So she said, I'll look and see where the people are, and I'll write it down on my ever-growing list of countries to visit. So I feel quite positive. So for her, I said, well, absolutely carry on. You know, you've demonstrated that actually it's not feeding into a low mood or anything like that. So I think it's always really important to share that science with them and, you know, have them use it as they feel appropriate. But recognizing the pitfalls is a good starting point anyway.
Absolutely. And just reflecting even yourself, it's a great skill to learn. You know, just kind of, how is this making me feel? And if it's making you feel good, great, fire ahead. But if it's not, then it's just good to know that it can have that effect on people. And gosh, I'll be repeating that to all my friends and the kids on a regular basis now. That's brilliant. So are there new challenges, Alison, that are cropping up apart from the kind of legacy of COVID?
I think and certainly what the surveys, the young people's mental health and wellbeing survey showed, is that young people do worry about the future a lot. And I think with the hardship and the pressure on jobs and the working environment, all of that, they're very aware of that. And some, particularly those maybe left university or left school and are looking for jobs, are acutely aware of that. And I think that's a challenge for young people to navigate and you know, certainly are aware of. And I think that was also what fueled the Just Talk campaign on what's next, is recognising that young people are very aware of those sorts of challenges and what they're coming into. Same with climate change. And I know often young people get badged as, you know, not being mindful of any of that. But in fact, again, what surveys have shown is that they are very concerned and very worried about it. And, you know, recognising that they may not be able to resolve it all in a day or a week, but certainly making those small changes and empowering them to make those small changes can be really, you know, really important to help in that direction. And also, I think validating that concern and saying, even as, you know, as adults, we feel the same, and helping them find a way to manage it.
Absolutely. I mean, you said it there. I mean, it's a great issue to flag with parents, that young people are worried about these kind of things, that we should legitimately listen to them and hear what they have to say about it, because they're the next generation. And it's no wonder they're worried about climate change or the climate crisis. It's no wonder at all.
Yes, absolutely. And they are encouraging them or empowering them to sort of make those small changes and feel like they're, without being overwhelmed with the enormity of it all, is quite a good well, much as we should all do, I think, is quite a good, yeah, is quite a good lesson.
Absolutely. So what developments do you feel positive about? And are there any ones in particular that you'd like to flag up to parents?
Yeah, I suppose one that I'm especially excited about, because certainly in the GP world, we're all clamouring for it, is the CYP mental health system is going through a redesign that involves a single front door, digital front door, and that's well underway to being progressed. So I know I've rattled off a load of early intervention services and various things that are available to young people and parents to access. And much as GPs tell me, that's all very bewildering. And where on earth, you know, how are we going to hold all that in our heads, and where can we go? One easy point that we can be able to access it all. And this is going to be the answer to that. So essentially, you access the system through this single digital front door where all that information is collated, or it may even just be you're seeking for, you know, seeking information at that point. But if you're looking to find some level of support but not sure how or where to access that, then more information will be collected in a referral type form, and then you'll be signposted and directed through this whole array of resources, that some of which I've just mentioned, and handheld through it. So, you know, you won't feel like you're being bounced from one area to another, and that the most appropriate service for you at that time can be, you can access. So I think that's really exciting, and the provider's already in place and the website is already well on its way. I'm saying about Just Talk and going to Just Talk for a lot of these resources, and that will still continue to be the case, and they'll still run the campaigns that meet the young people's needs at that time. But ultimately, access into the whole system will be through this digital front door. So it will make it a lot easier for children and people, parents, carers, schools, GPs, you know, all professionals as well, to navigate all the services.
Brilliant. And is the digital front door the Youth Talk website?
No, so the Digital Front Door is a new website that will be launched,
okay,
behind which of the resources will be sat. So stretching from those resources to keep mentally fit that Just Talk offer as well, right the way through to needing crisis intervention. So when you step through that front door, the most appropriate service at that time, you'll be navigated through to.
That's fantastic.
So it will align with the Just Talk website. So I've just mentioned the Just Talk website. So at the moment, that's the one that holds all of these resources and campaigns and things that young people and parents and carers and professionals can go to access now. But this new front door, so it won't just be a website of information, it will also be a referral tool as well, will sort of encompass all of that.
That's fantastic. Brilliant. So there's just...
It's just
getting easier all the time, and it just sounds like it's more and more accessible, more and more innovative, more and more,
yes,
bespoke. It's great.
Yes. Yeah, and that's also, so the sort of look of it and how you navigate it is all done in partnership with children and young people, so and other stakeholders, so to make sure that it's accessible and meeting the needs.
Brilliant. Now, I always love to get your advice about what we should be talking to our kids about, because we know there are parents out there like me who are very keen to just bury their head in the sand and avoid any of those tricky conversations. But I know deep down that's not the right way to approach it. Any tips for us and parents and carers out there about tricky conversations to navigate and what we should be saying?
Yeah, so I mean, I think recognizing how young people are behaving, if, you know, noticing if you're worried that they seem more withdrawn, and, you know, checking in, not being afraid to check in, not being put off by any angry outbursts or slam doors, because often that's just the tip of an iceberg beneath which there's lots of worrying emotions, because we know that certainly teenage years are a time of rapid change, and that in itself, even when it's all normal and following the right course, can be quite bewildering and destabilizing. And then on top of that, we've had those recent pressures of COVID and hardship and things. So it's sort of acknowledging or recognizing that it's a time, it can be a tricky time, and checking in, really, I think is the main thing. And I think as well, it's always important to normalize, you know, and validate whatever they're fear or whatever their concern might be as well, and reflect our own views. Actually, yeah, no, I've felt I was always quite happy to say, you know, it is unsettling in COVID when things change course a bit, and, you know, there was only so much of the COVID updates I could manage when with you know, that feeling your anxieties increase. So sort of, I suppose, also normalizing that and saying it's quite, well, not only is it a normal emotion, but it can be quite helpful just to sort of help us know. My big thing is not to fear negative emotions, to see them as an opportunity to change things up if we can. So, you know, recognize that it's there in order to sort of keep us safe, but equally can be helpful to encourage people to talk. I think that's the big thing, encouraging, you know, once you start that conversation, you can often things feel a lot better, and normalizing, validating those emotions, but at the same time sort of recognizing that they can also be quite normal.
Thanks, Alison. Oh, brilliant. Wise words. Yeah, just and keeping the dialogue.
Keeping that door open, not being put off. If you seem to be ignored or have had a frosty shoulder, it's often because underpinning that there's a lot of anxiety or worry so just sort of knowing that they can access you at any time and keeping that dialogue open, as you say.
Brilliant. So I'm going to remember that with its tip of the iceberg. If the door is getting slammed. Yeah.
And in fact, there's an amazing study, and I can't even remember who delivered it now, who showed young people lots of different faces and asked them to describe it. And, you know, very often they can misinterpret things anyway. And so like a happy face, they might say, well, that person's very angry. And so very often underneath everything, even if you're asking nicely to tidy your room, they can see that as an assault. And, you know, they can be quite sensitive but recognizing there's a lot going on behind that. And so that might be their slam door is more just them sort of verbalizing or manifesting that aspect of things.
Great stuff. Thanks so much, Alison. So you've given us so much food for thought and really, really helpful advice about young people. So I suppose we're thinking more about 10 and over. But can we ask you about what's going on in the news at the moment? So I think everybody's noticed this concern about measles.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about what you know about it and what you think we should be doing?
Yeah, sure. So you probably all will be familiar that the UK Health Security Agency declared an outbreak last month because the cases had increased, and largely in the East Midlands and in London. So although Hertfordshire isn't deemed to be, there isn't an outbreak as such in Hertfordshire, being quite close in proximity. And given how infectious measles is, it's important that everyone ensures they do what they can to protect themselves and the community. And that really is getting vaccinated, making sure your vaccinations are up to date. All of the cases of measles have been in unvaccinated children, and it still, you know, carries a risk of complications, 1 in 5. And that's particularly so in those that are immunocompromised or the very young, or, you know, pregnancy, malnourishment, and those over 20. So that is very important that we take it seriously. We recognise that it is a dangerous illness, and yet to get to be very mindful of any rash or fevers, particularly in the unvaccinated population, to respond quickly to that. And where possible, it's never too late to get vaccinated. So make sure that vaccine's in place. So the first one dose gives sort of over 90% protection, but two doses gives lifelong protection in excess of 97%. So it's very definitely worthwhile getting, with very, very few risks, if any.
That's fantastic. Very few risks. Two injections, lifelong immunity, almost 97%, yes. You said. And it's never too late to get it done. So there are actually pop-up clinics. And you can easily get the measles vaccination if you haven't already.
Absolutely. So I know across Hertfordshire, West Essex, through half term, they've got pop-up clinics. I'm looking at the list now. There's a number to ring to book an appointment. I don't know whether it's helpful to say the number now.
Yeah, absolutely. And if anybody's listening to the podcast then, and you've kind of missed a half-term opportunity to get the vaccination, I'm sure.
Absolutely, they'll continue to, and GP surgeries are very aware as well of that. And so certainly for half-term, where they've got quite a few pop-up clinics, and the number is 0300 555 5055, and then it's option one. But I can circulate that information. I think it's also come through schools as well. But as you say, even beyond half term, any opportunity, it's important to make sure you've had your two doses of MMR to get that lifelong protection.
Brilliant, Alison. I think we've totally exploited you today. We've asked you everything we wanted to ask, but it's been an absolute pleasure. And thanks so much for your sound advice and expertise.
Not at all. I've really enjoyed being on. So thank you for having me.
Take care. Thanks a million.
Bye.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
You're listening to The Parents Show on Hearts Mix 92.6. Thank you again for joining us. Now, I'm joined by Nicola McKinnon from Hearts Young Homeless. And it's worth saying before we chat that the rain is so heavy that you might even hear some of it on the studio roof. Hopefully that won't be too painful to listen to. But without further ado, let's chat to Nicola. Nicola, thank you so much for joining us here on The Parents Show. Welcome. And can you tell us a bit about yourself and also a bit about Hearts Young Homeless, please?
I am Nicola and I live in St Albans and I've raised my children here. And I joined Hearts Young Homeless about 3 years ago. And I am the community fundraiser for the charity. So in short, that kind of means that I go out and about and like talk to all sorts of different community groups across the whole of Hertfordshire about ways in which they can support us, both by spreading awareness of what we do and by helping us to raise money. So the charity itself, we celebrated our 25th anniversary last year. It always feels odd to say that we celebrated because actually the truth of it is we'd love to not exist anymore. If there was no youth homelessness and we didn't have to be here, that would be the best celebration of all. But we celebrated 25 years of doing some really great work. We mainly work with 16 to 24 year old young people across the whole county. And those young people will be either at risk of homelessness or find themselves without anywhere permanent to live. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. We are, as I often say in my presentations, we are exactly what our charity name is. We help young people at risk of homelessness across Hertfordshire.
So as you say, very sad that you're still going 25 years later in some ways. I'd imagine things have changed a lot in that time. So now in 2024, what are some of the unique challenges and, you know, what causes young people in Hertfordshire and makes them homeless? Because we imagine Hertfordshire sometimes to be a certain way, quite affluent and, you know, full of green spaces. And, you know, you must see another side of that. So what makes people homeless in Hertfordshire?
We do. And actually, I mean, the answer is UK-wide to that question, Neil, which is that the biggest cause of youth homelessness in the UK is family breakdown. And this is one of the really interesting challenges that we have at Hearts Young Homeless is, first and foremost, you have to break through some of those misunderstandings about what homelessness is. So we are not a charity that looks after street homeless. The majority of young people are sofa surfing, they're in temporary accommodation, they're in a hostel. That is their experience of homelessness. One of the things that I first learned when I joined this charity is that those people that you see sleeping on the streets, of which I'm sure we would both agree there are way too many of, they represent 1 in 100 of what we classify as homeless in this country. And I found that an absolutely staggering and heartbreaking figure when I first found it out, because the other 99 are like our young people. They are in temporary accommodation. They are sleeping on somebody's sofa. They may be bouncing backwards and forwards as adults in domestic violence situations. So there are all sorts of other reasons why we would classify somebody as homeless other than just the what we, I think, as a country and certainly as a county, believe that whole seeing somebody sleeping in a doorway with a sleeping bag.
That's so interesting because exactly as you say, Nicola, like, you know, 1 in 100, I think if you ask most people how they viewed a homeless person, that's exactly the image they have. So it's so interesting to hear that there's a kind of almost silent majority out there.
Yeah, and they would think that there were way too many of those people as well. So the idea that there's another 99 out there in that same classification, I think is awful.
Absolutely. That's really food for thought. So every homeless person you see, there's another 99 also homeless.
Officially classified as homeless. Yeah.
Wow. So Nicola, I mean, I'm a man who does my research, I should say that. So I believe you help around 2,000 young people each year.
Yeah.
Does that sound right?
It does.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. I'm really relieved about that. So what are some of the key ways that you help these young people? What are the key services and support you provide?
So as a charity, our first focus is on the prevention of homelessness. if a young person can never, ever, even for one night, experience the uncertainty of not knowing where they're going to sleep and where they're going to wake up and where they're going back to bed again the following night, that has got to be the goal. Because just that one night of uncertainty, we have no idea what the long-term implications of that are, even if you get that young person back somewhere really secure. So as I say, it's the breakdown of families that is the largest cause of youth homelessness. So we have two methods of prevention. We start with an education program, and our education team aims to go out to as many secondary schools as possible across Hertfordshire. They have a range of different lessons and information that they give. The aim is to equip young people with knowledge and skills so that if there is a crisis, they know how to avert it and how to be within that. We're also providing those students with the knowledge of where to get help and support should that crisis be happening in their either their own personal situation or that of a friend that they know. And as a result, that 2,000 actually is round about 9,500 young people that we directly will be aiming to impact. But a large chunk of those is through our education program. So you start with education. You then have families and young people who come to us and their family is in crisis. They are in breakdown. And we have a mediation service. And that mediation service is 6 sessions offered to the young person and their adult or adults, carer, parent, whoever that might be that that relationship is breaking down with. And those 6 sessions are built bespoke. We have a number of different tools and techniques and interactive games and things that get them talking. You're trying to find out what the problem is. What is it that's causing the breakdown? I've raised 2 teenagers. I was a teenager. Teenagers, I often say to people, teenagers and their parents, we are basically incompatible with each other. And most of the time you get through that relatively unscathed with a few raised voices and a few slammed doors. But if you don't have this support structure in place, if you don't know how to navigate through a crisis because maybe it was never modelled to you in your upbringing, you've had no exposure to it, we intervene at that point. So that's the mediation team come in and they are there to support and help guide 2 people into having conversation again, into re-establishing communication with each other. And last year, our mediation team, where a young person and their adult fully engaged in the process and the full 6 sessions, 90% of those families either remained together or the young person came back home again. So I think that's an incredible figure and one that I'm always really proud to tell the story of, because we prevented homelessness in 90% of those families. And that's incredible. So, yeah, I think it's a fabulous service. We then move on to those situations where that's not a good, where it's not a fixable situation. There will always be situations where it's not appropriate for the young person to go back home. And we then work with them. We have sort of 2 crisis intervention points. The first is for those who are under 18. And then we have another team who work with the over 18s. And that has a very different look and feel to it in terms of what we do with them.
So it's interesting to hear you talking about this, Nicola. So obviously you guys are, you know, sadly, this is such an issue that there's a kind of sector built up around it to try and deal with it. So, but when you talk about a family breakdown, do you mean literally the family cannot live together? Is that what when you say a breakdown, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, the arguments escalate out of control, that what started as a fight about not keeping your bedroom tidy builds and builds and builds, and teenagers push back. Sometimes it is literal breakdown. Sometimes it could be that the family, the parents have split up, or that there's some other crisis within the family, loss of income, bereavement. You know, there are all sorts of things that come into that. But the pure and simple heart of all of that is adults and teenagers who can't find a way to move forward. And sometimes that teenager will feel that they don't want to be at home anymore, that it's no longer a good place for them to be, and they pack their bags and they leave and they go and ask a friend if they can sleep on their sofa. Sometimes it will be the other way around, that the parent will feel that the teenager is too disruptive an influence and they will ask them to not stay at home anymore. lots of those are fixable with better communication and better tools to understanding about anger management and talking to people and compromise. You know, I think you and I would both say we're probably living in a world where opinions appear to be becoming ever more binary by the day. And that doesn't help when it comes to negotiating and compromising and living harmoniously under the same roof.
Yeah, it's so true. And as someone who can be stubborn myself, I dread the days of my son becoming a teenager. You know, you both kind of get stuck and go a bit further away from each other and both feel hard done by, I guess.
You do. I you know, sharing a personal story, I can remember my eldest son very similar to me in personality, and that often doesn't help when you fall into the same category as you, Neil, which is a little bit stubborn. And I can remember occasions where we would just be yelling at each other, and it takes you as the parent to remember that you're the adult and to close it down and to step away. And sometimes families don't have that. They don't have that support network around them. I had a husband I could go to and rant at him instead, and that made me feel better, and we processed it together. But if you don't have that, or you don't have a wider family around you or a wider community, if you are struggling financially, if there are other pressures and other burdens in that family, it doesn't take many pins to be pulled out before the structure starts to disintegrate and your ability to cope with a teenager who's pushing back and challenging, which is what teenagers do. That's how they get to be adults. That's what's going on with their brain. But if you're not equipped well as two groups of conflicting people, sometimes the only solution feels like not staying in the same house with each other.
Yeah, it sounds sad to hear, but I get it, because, you know, life is relentless, right? And you haven't always got time to, well, you should do, but you haven't always got time to manage the important relationships, I guess. So you must see a lot of that.
Yeah. And so what we're hoping with the mediation service is, the brilliant thing about it is that you shouldn't just be fixing that one bump in the road that this family are encountering. You're giving them skills for life. You are giving them a skill set that means that the next time the bump in the road comes, they ought to be able to navigate through it. And in theory, you're giving that young person the skills that they then take into adult life, into every potential conflict situation they come into. You are teaching them how to navigate through the stuff that is adulting. And in theory, you do that once with them, you give them that toolkit, and they get on with the rest of their lives as a family, and that young person moves on at the appropriate time rather than in a conflict situation. So yeah, it's you aren't just fixing 90% of the families for that one occasion. And I think that's really important too.
And yeah, like, prevention's better than cure, I guess.
Always, yeah. Particularly in a situation like this. You know, I take myself back to being 16, where I thought I probably knew everything. But I thought I knew everything with the safety of knowing that my bedroom was always there and the fridge was always full for breakfast and all of those things. Would I have been as confident if somebody had told me that I couldn't stay living there anymore? No, it's almost entirely likely that, yeah, any shred of confidence that I'd had, which I think you probably say at 16 is cockiness occasionally, certainly in my case, it would be gone. And so what we're aiming to do is prevent that uncertainty for somebody.
Okay, so people who are listening, Nicola, some of them be learning this for the first time. I certainly am. You know, you're helping all these young people. Is there any way that people listening can kind of, I don't know, help out, get involved, support what you're doing in any way?
Yeah, so my role is to raise awareness and raise funds for the charity. We get some central support for some of the services that we do, but we have to raise over £500,000 a year, roughly, to keep going all of these different services. All these services, things like mediation, they are free at the point of use to our young people and their families, because money cannot be a barrier to them accessing these services. But we pay brilliant people to be our mediators, because our young people deserve the very best. They deserve people who are skilled and trained to do this job, and those people deserve a salary for what it is that they do. So we're a service-driven charity, which ultimately means that most of the money that we raise and we generate goes to pay people to deliver a service to our young people. We run a phenomenal number of different opportunities during the year, both centrally and then other groups that will choose us as their charity of the year. So I work with schools. So I know this is a parenting show. So I am always primary schools. I go out and I have a very age-appropriate assembly that I deliver. And then hopefully the school will choose to do something as simple as a bake sale or a non-uniform day to help raise money for us and raise awareness. Secondary schools often choose us as their charity of the year. Uniformed groups, brownies, scouts, guides, that side of things. If parents are in sports clubs or kids are in sports clubs, I was at Westminster Lodge earlier this week for a swim club challenge, not myself personally, and there were nearly 90 young people who swam constantly for an hour. And as a club, they've raised over £2,000 for us. They also swam, I believe, over 230,000 metres collectively. So, you know, those are the ways in which people can get involved. They can choose us as a charity. They can find out a bit more about us. I struggle for volunteers during the year, partly because we need people predominantly weekends and evenings. There's no set pattern to it. It can be quite ad hoc. It can be all over the county. But there are lots of fundraising opportunities that I can't necessarily get myself to that it would be brilliant to have somebody at that would help us as an organisation. But yeah, we've got lots of other events that we originate ourselves as well. So there's a full calendar of those on our website. We're on all social media platforms. We have a person doing our social media for us. She's fantastic, which means that we are starting to really break into the world of TikTok, which clearly I know nothing about, but she does. So that's absolutely fine.
As long as somebody does, right?
Yeah. You need somebody age appropriate to be guiding you through TikTok, and she definitely is. So yeah, we're really pleased to have her on board.
So I guess, I mean, you know, it's a huge amount of funds you need to raise every year. It must be a bit like painting the fourth bridge, just constantly doing it.
Yeah, as fundraisers, and you'll hear this in any charity, anybody who fundraises for a charity, you'll hear this the world over. Our financial year runs from the 1st of April onwards. And so we are currently sitting, fortunately, in the part of the year where we are now, amazingly, thanks to the incredible generosity of people across Hertfordshire, we know that we are going to make our targets for this financial year. And on the 1st of April, it all goes back to zero. We have to start all over again. And it always feels like a mountain. The 1st of April is a hard, hard day for charity fundraisers. We are not full of the joys of spring at that moment. We are full of the opportunity and the amazing things coming our way. But we've got all of it to raise all over again. So yeah, fourth bridge painting is absolutely the analogy.
Well, congratulations to you guys for meeting the target. And I guess well done to anybody listening who's been involved in any of that. That's an incredible effort.
Oh, I mean, you know, as fundraisers, it's really amazing. We couldn't do it without the people out there, the swim club this week, who chose us to be their charity, and the school that do a small bake sale for us. I always say in community fundraising, I think it's incredible how small amounts of money collectively with a large number of people melts up to make the sort of money that we're needing to raise every year. We're very fortunate. We work with some organisations across Hertfordshire. We're always looking for new partnerships to work with businesses, and they often raise multiple thousands for us, and that's incredible. But never think that because all you've got to spare is the £2 to give to your child for non-uniform day, that it's not making a difference. I had a check from a school this week for a non-uniform day, a secondary school, albeit, for over £1,700. And that was £2 a parent, £2
a
child.
Do you want to give the school a name check?
No, I'm not, because I don't want any other charities going and knocking on their door. I want them to stay fundraising for me.
That's fair enough, yeah. That's fair enough. Keep them close to your chest. So look, Nicola, we're nearly running out of time, but I just wonder, at the risk of putting you on the spot, is there a particular kind of highlight for you since you started working with Hearts Young Homeless?
As I say, I've had some incredible supporter events in the last 3 years that have raised thousands of pounds. And those really are amazing. And there have been plenty of them. And I'm so grateful to those people who've done those things. But actually, my highlight on an almost weekly basis is when I go out to deliver a presentation or do a radio interview, where I get the chance to share what it is that our frontline teams are doing and the amazing work that they are putting in and the young people that they are helping. Answering the questions of people who don't know very much about what we do and what homelessness looks like, and really increasing that understanding across Hertfordshire. Because the more people across Hertfordshire who know about us, the more support we get. That is as simple as it works. And the more support we get, the more young people we can help. And the more awareness we raise, the more young people know that we exist. And that really is the nub of what I do as a job. And you go into a primary school and you talk to a load of 8 to 10-year-olds, and people say to me, gosh, does it not scare them for you to go in and talk to them about that? And the answer is no. Actually, primary school kids on the whole are great listeners. They always have the best questions. And I come out of a 20-minute assembly from talking to primary school kids, and you just think, that's why I do this job, and that's what I love the most. So that would be my highlight, really, is, yeah, a group of primary school kids who might only raise £100, £150, but have really genuinely listened and understand that life without a home is not what they're experiencing and would be really quite awful.
Yeah, fantastic. What a lovely note to finish on. So crucially, Nicola, where can people find out more about Hearts Young Homeless?
So we're on all social media platforms. We have our own YouTube channel. There are some amazing videos on there. We've had 2 or 3 new ones in the last few months. And I would encourage people, if they want to learn a bit more about what we do, those are absolutely the place to go and find out about us. Our website is full of information. It's got our annual report on it. It's got links to all of the different things that we do, what our services are about. Come to one of our events. There are plenty throughout the year. We have everything from a quiz night. We've got a summer party this year in June over at Mill Green Golf Club. That's going to be lovely. Bit of music, couple of drinks, all going to be very lovely. And hopefully the sun's going to shine. There are challenge events that people can do. They can cycle, they can swim, they can jump out of an aeroplane, strap themselves to an aeroplane. We've got wing walking, all of those mad, crazy things that charity people try to push on people. So yeah, look at our website, but most importantly, follow us on social media. Our social media person is absolutely brilliant. She makes sure that it's a really good mix of content about what we do as a charity and the opportunities that there are for people to get involved with volunteering or signing up to a fundraiser. So yeah, social media.
That's great. Nicola, thank you so much. And thanks for all the work you and the whole team do. It sounds so important that you're around. And I thought your one person, 100 is the one you can see, was kind of staggering to me, but it's been really interesting to talk to you today. So thank you so much for joining us here on The Parents Show.
No, thanks very much, Neil. It's been good to be here.